Amen. You guys can take a seat. Well, my name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors at Revision. I'm excited to be here this morning. How about you? All right. Shout out to everyone watching online. So glad that you guys are tuned in from wherever you are. So it's been a crazy week, and I'm going to admit to you guys that I found myself at one point having a bit of a crisis of confidence in our government systems. But it's totally different than what you're expecting. We had to buy a new trailer for Revision a few months ago because this summer our trailer full of gear got stolen, which was a barrel of fun. And if you stole it, or if you're watching online, we're Christians. We'll forgive you. Just give it back, okay? But we had to make an appointment to go get taxes and tags for the new one. And it ended up being our kids pastor, Courtney, who drove down to the DMV center on like 2nd and Court to get it registered. And when she got back to the office, she informed us that apparently you have to get your temperature taken to enter any government buildings right now. And my fear immediately was that she had a temperature of like 99 and they wouldn't let her in and we'd have to schedule another appointment like 2 months out to finally get it taken care of. But then she pulled out the plates. So I said, apparently you were fine. And she answered, maybe? Like I leaned in to get my forehead scanned and the guy said, 92, you're good to go. And all I could think was, am I? 92? She was mostly dead, and that guy didn't care at all. He should have rushed her to the hospital, not sent her to file important tax documentation. 95 is hypothermia. 92, you lose consciousness. I was just impressed she made it back to the office in that condition. And honestly, I was mostly grateful that the state of Iowa is putting only the most highly trained, deeply concerned professionals in charge of protecting our public spaces. We are living in weird times. But seriously, in a season like this one, you guys, I'm convinced that what a divided world desperately needs is a unified church. And that what a scared world desperately needs is a fearless church. The people all around us that we're crashing into daily, physically and digitally, are crying out for hope in a time that feels hopeless, and we are God's answer to their cries. I know some of you are sitting here this morning and you don't feel fearless at all. You don't feel like a bearer of hope or a leader that can unify people, but I promise you, you are not far from being that. Wherever you're at right now, Jesus has 4 words for you. They're 4 game-changing words. And I'll tell you this, when I've aimed my life in the direction of those words, I've been able to pour out the love of God on the people around me. I've been a better husband, father, and leader. I've been the version of me I believe God made me to be. But when I haven't let them sink in and guide me, I've had moments where I gained a whole lot of the world and lost a little bit of my soul in the process. Where I hurt the people that I care about and lost the respect of those that matter most to me. And we'll get to those 4 words in a little bit, but first 3 words, you're not far. This morning we're in week 4 of this series called You're Not Far, where we've been looking at the story of Jesus as it was told by Simon Peter. It was dictated to and edited by his ministry intern, John Mark, in Rome, where Peter was imprisoned and soon to be executed. And this morning, I'm going to ask you to do the same thing I've asked you to do for the last 4 weeks. As we read through this, as we dig in, don't hear this as reading the Bible. It is reading the Bible, but Mark was not sitting in that jail cell in front of a papyrus in 59 AD thinking, hey, I'm writing the Bible. He was just trying to get Peter's story down on paper. And this story, which never should have escaped the city of Rome, never should have made it out of the first century, did. And it got circulated all around the globe and included in the Bible. We know it as the book of Mark. And so as we dig into Mark this morning, hear Peter telling his story one last time so people could remember it once he was gone. And if you've been here, you've been online for the last 4 weeks, you know this. But if you haven't, let me catch you up real quick. Peter kicks off his story with the big idea. He starts it by dropping the bomb. He says, look, Mark, every time Jesus preached, each time a crowd gathered around him and he taught, every chance he got to like proclaim a message to people, this is what he said. The kingdom of God is near. He said, the time has come. The whole world has been broken. It's been waiting for this time ever since things got messed up in the garden. The time has come. The kingdom is near. So for all of you who've ever felt far from God, you felt cut off, like he's impossibly distant and there's no way to get to him, that's not true anymore. The king came to you. So all you got to do is repent. You got to turn around the way you've been thinking. Stop walking down your own failed path and follow me down mine to the life you were created for. Repent and believe the good news. And we left off Peter's story last week, the powers that be in first century Israel. The religious and political authorities were looking for a way to kill Jesus because he was messing up their whole world. They'd created this system where they had a whole lot of power and a whole lot of wealth and a whole lot of status and a whole lot of glory because they made everyone around them jump through all the right hoops in all the right ways so they could feel good with God. They basically elevated their own man-made religious traditions over the heart of God, and Jesus showed up and turned it all upside down. He said, you have everything exactly backwards. Rules were made for the benefit of people. People weren't made for the benefit of rules. So these guys were furious, and they're looking for a way to kill him. And Peter tells us that a whole bunch of people started to find hope and peace, healing and freedom in Jesus. And we're going to pick up the story this morning in a place about 60 miles north of Jerusalem called Caesarea Philippi. It's where Jesus had one of the most significant conversations of his life with his disciples. And so if you have a Bible or a Bible with you this morning, you can crack it open to the book of Mark, chapter 8. Mark is sandwiched right between Matthew and Luke. If you don't have a Bible, no worries, the words are going to be up on the screen. And if you don't own one, please take one from the Next Steps table before you go. And if you're watching online and you need a Bible, please let us know on your connection card. We would love to mail you one because we believe at Revision Church the stories inside this book, stories like Peter's story, really will change your life. And so Mark chapter 8, starting verse 27, Peter tells us, me and the guys and Jesus are walking along around the towns near Caesarea Philippi. And as we're walking, he looked at us and he asked the question, who do people say that I am? And we're like, is this a trick question? We've been with Jesus long enough to know sometimes it was a trick question. But we just told him, we're like, well, some people say you're John the Baptist, like reincarnated, which is dumb because we've hung out with both of you together before his head got cut off and stuff. So you're not that. But other people say you're Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets. And then we walked a little further and Jesus looked at us. He said, well, who do you say that I am? And Peter's telling Mark, look, at this point, nobody wanted to get that answer wrong. And so all the other 11 nerds looked at me like, Peter, you're the only one dumb enough to answer this. Give it a shot. And so I did. I just told Jesus what I thought. I told him, we say you're the Messiah. You're the Son of God. You're the one that God promised would come and save us and set up a new kingdom. Now press pause on Peter's story real quick. I think we don't understand how radical this moment was. Because we have the benefit of 2,000 years of hindsight, we don't realize that when Peter said those words, every single one of the disciples kind of had a lump in their throat as they waited for Jesus' answer. Because in 30 AD, if you called someone God who wasn't God and you were a Jew, they were going to kill you for that stuff. And so the other 11 guys are like, is Peter going to die now? I don't know. And what happens is instead of Jesus being like, no, Peter, you're getting a little carried away. Be quiet with that stuff before we throw rocks at you. He says, you're spot on. That's exactly who I am. And built on that picture of who I am, that truth about what I came to do, I'm going to start this whole new thing in the world. This whole new movement, this thing I'm going to call my ecclesia, my community of called out ones. And later on, they're going to call it the church. But you guys, the pathway that it's going to take to get there from here, from where we are, it isn't going to be at all what you expected. And Peter tells us Jesus began to teach them at that point that he was going to have to suffer many things at the hands of the chief priests, the elders, and the teachers of the law, that he had to be killed and 3 days later rise again. I imagine Peter sitting there looking at Mark being like, I didn't know what that meant. Jesus always talked in parables. We're like, what is the death parable? It's what about Bob? Death therapy cured me for, I don't know what he's doing. And the rising again part, I didn't get. And we were all a little confused. And then the crowds were definitely confused. They were like leaving. And we had a good thing going, especially like the 12 of us who were like his best friends and his right-hand men. And then we started to see people like peeling off and going home. And so the other disciples, again, they're like, Pete, you got to say something to him. He's getting weird. And so I did. He spoke plainly about his death and I rebuked him. And I said, no, stop talking about the dying stuff. You're scaring the children, man. That's not how it's going to go. And then he turned around with fire in his eyes and he looked at all of us and he rebuked me. He said, get behind me, Satan, for you do not have in mind the concerns of God, but the concerns of man. And Peter's going, Mark, that was a great day in my life. I went from being the guy who correctly identified Jesus as God and I was going to get to lead his like mission church thing, whatever he's calling that. I was going to be the leader of that. And then I was Satan. Same day. I was really nailing it that day. It was, whew. But then Jesus totally changes the game. Because like up to this point, we've been following him. We're like, man, this kingdom is awesome. There's healing and there's food and there's a whole lot of benefits to following. But I hadn't really ever stopped to think about what it might actually cost me to step away from my path and start following Jesus down his path. And then he started talking about his path leading to death. I'm like, wait, what? Because my whole life, everything the religious leaders had taught me was that like you earn your own fate. Good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people and bad things can't happen to good people. So how in the world could Jesus die? Because he was like the goodest dude we ever knew. Matter of fact, he was the goddest dude we ever knew. Write that down, Mark. That's good. You're not writing. What's up? Whatever, man. All right, fine. So he called the whole crowd to him. Everybody. He said, hey, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. For what good is it to gain the whole world if you forfeit your soul? Well, this is such a crazy moment. Can you imagine being Peter right here? Or being anyone in the crowd? You've been following Jesus, and it's been really cool, but all of a sudden you got a decision to make, because he just repainted the whole picture you had of what his kingdom was going to be like. He showed up and said, yeah, I am a king, but I'm not anything like the king you were expecting me to be. You were picturing a king on a throne. I'm the king on a cross. And the only similarity at all between a throne and a cross is that they're both built out of wood. In that moment, I so relate. I don't know about you guys, but I so relate to Peter's impulse to rebuke Jesus. Because Peter had a vision of where he was going as he followed Jesus. He had an agenda, and crosses weren't on it. It's really easy for us to look back a couple thousand years later and see this whole thing is just symbolic, because in our world, crosses are symbolic. But a couple thousand years ago, for everybody who heard Jesus say, take up your cross, it wasn't a symbol at all. They had seen crucifixions. They'd heard crucifixions. They'd walked by the bodies and smelled crucifixions. They knew that a cross wasn't at all like a throne. A cross is where you got stripped of your humanity and stripped of your dignity. You hung naked until you were eventually stripped of your life. And they wanted nothing to do with that. And here's Jesus saying, hey, anybody who wants to save their life, and that's all of us, right? That's every single human being on this planet. Part of why 2020 has been so nuts is that we are surrounded by people who are desperately trying to save their lives. Jesus said, hey, you want to save your life, you're going to lose it. But if you lose your life for me, you're going to save it. And I think we can all admit that on the surface, that is an entirely nonsensical thing to say. But check it out. The word that Peter uses for life here in this story is this Greek word, psuche. Psuche means like your self-image, your identity, your concept of what makes you, you. And Jesus is saying, look, whatever worldly thing it is in your life that has defined you in your own mind, that's given you value in your own mind, whether it's your success, your career, your looks, romance, power, politics, whatever that thing is, if that's the thing that you think makes you valuable as a human being, if that's the thing that your selfhood is caught up in, you will waste your entire life chasing it. Because you're going to lose it in the end. Everybody dies. Everybody dies. And if all you've ever lived for was yourself, then at the end of the day, yourself is all you'll have to show for yourself, and yourself is not enough. It's too small of a thing to live for. And so Jesus invites us to live for something bigger and something better, to put death behind us so life's in front of us and we can walk out and see the world with an entirely different perspective, one that's focused outward rather than inward. Because Jesus lets us know it's once we finally realize that the things of this world are not what make us valuable that we're finally set free to give all of those things away. All of them. And as crazy as that sounds, Jesus says, it's once we do that, once we begin to give our lives away, once we follow his path away from selfishness toward the needy and the broken, that we find our true psuche. We find true life. We find our creative purpose for which we were created by our Creator. C.S. Lewis put it this way. The more we get what we now call ourselves out of the way and let Jesus take us over, the more truly ourselves we become. Our real selves are all waiting for us in him. So Jesus invites this whole crowd to pick up their crosses and follow him to Jerusalem, follow him to his cross. And suddenly, Pete and all the fellows got a decision to make. Like, are they going to do that? Or are they just going to kind of stay right where they are and fish their lives away? At this point, they were not far from home. They're right there by the Sea of Galilee. They could have gone back and lived simple little lives and died in their beds as old men, forgotten by the world. They had to choose. Like, am I going to do that? Or am I going to follow Jesus and go live on purpose? Everybody ends up somewhere in life. It's the intentional people who end up somewhere on purpose. And for you and me today, we have the exact same choice set before us. Are we going to continue chasing the things our world says will give us value that have only ever left us empty in the past? Or are we going to follow Jesus wherever he leads, even if it's difficult, and live on purpose? Peter lets us know what decision he made. He says, look, some of the crowd started peeling off. They were going home, but we were in. I decided I'm following him. And so we started heading toward Jerusalem. And Jesus, it was like he was excited to get there. And that's why I didn't think he was going to die. He was walking very fast. And I would not have been walking that fast if I was going to die. But we're walking along toward Jerusalem. And he kept telling us, we're headed up to Jerusalem now. And when we get there, the chief priests and the elders and the teachers of the law are going to turn me over to the Gentiles. And they will mock me, spit on me, flog me, and kill me. And 3 days later, I will rise. Peter says he said all this stuff and he's still just going to Jerusalem anyway. And then something happened. Peter's like, he was like up ahead and we saw James and John, the sons of Zebedee, and they're kind of like jogging to catch up to him. And I didn't know what they were saying. And later I found out they caught up to him and they're like, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked. They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in glory. Again, time out on Peter's story. That's their question. These two dudes just caught up to Jesus, and the question they had to ask right after he told them how he was going to die was like, well, Jesus, we're real sorry about all that flogging and spitting and dying stuff. But we need a favor. And she said, what is it? We're like, okay, well, during the torture and death part, we're probably going to hang back. That sounds rough for you. I don't know what it's going to be like, but we are convinced you're the king. So like after... On the other side of that, once you make it past the suffering and you get to the glory, we kind of want to re-engage the movement right then. Then can we be number two and number three? Is that cool? And of course, the other disciples found out that they asked that. And Peter says they're all so mad. But understand, as Peter tells Mark how mad he was, this is not his greatest moment. This isn't a highlight of Peter's story. Okay, because Peter and the other disciples, they weren't mad at James and John because of how insensitive they've been to Jesus right after he told them he was about to be spit on and whipped. They were mad because they're like, hey, what about me? I wanted to be number two. And Jesus in this moment, I just got to imagine he wanted to smite all 11 of them. Just like the emperor from Star Wars, just force lightning. He's just serenity now, and he's got it, and he's just looking at the 12 of them like, I just told you I'm going to be tortured and killed, and you're fighting about who's the most special. I hate all of you. And Peter says he told him, sit down, like a parent. He's like, sit down. Is this now? Do you guys understand that we're at the end of the story? Do you know what chapter it is? This is chapter 10. Have you not been paying attention to anything I said for the last 3 years? You guys are mad at James and John for all the wrong reasons. This is a terrible thing to be fighting about. Do you guys get it that like the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them? And the people in high places exercise authority over them. You know that's how it works, right? And it's interesting here. The words that Peter uses for exercise authority and lord it over are really unique words. There's one that shows up only a couple other times in the New Testament, and one of them is unique to all of ancient literature. It isn't found anywhere else in any other writing that anyone has ever discovered. And what he's doing here is using this unique set of words to drive home a powerful point that in our world, those who've reached the top of the org chart, those who've reached the pinnacle of success, those with power leverage other people for themselves. Everything flows to the top. That's how it goes. And Jesus looks at the disciples and they're sitting there on the side of the road. He says, do you guys get it that this is kind of how it works? And Peter's like, we're all sitting there like, yeah, we get it. That's why we want to be number two. We all know that's exactly how it works. You fight to get to the top, so everyone has to do what you say. And Jesus, like when we get to your kingdom, we get it that you have to be number one. But we kind of all want to be up there. We've been following you for a long time. We've earned it. We want a little bit of the glory. We want a little bit of the power. That's kind of what we're looking for. And as they're sitting there, like nodding their heads at that, Jesus says, you know how it works? Yeah, we know exactly how it works. And every single one of us in this room knows exactly how it works too. Every one of us watching online knows exactly how it works. And Jesus says, you know it works like that, right? Yeah. And then he drops four words on them. The four words I was talking about earlier this morning. And these four words, I would love it if you would write them down somewhere today. Put them in your phone. If you put them somewhere, you can see them every day. Your bathroom mirror. The dashboard of your car. If you're a tattoo person, get a tattoo. I'll write it in Greek for you so it looks cooler. Ukestai en humen. All right? He gives them these four words that absolutely change the game. He says, you know how that's, you know how the system works. Everything flows to the top. They're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Not so with you. Not so with you. So I know that's how it works in all the kingdoms of man, but that isn't how we're going to do it in my kingdom. And I love the way that he says this because it's a Greek imperfect verb. It indicates a continuing reality. He says, as you guys are going through the world, as my people, my tribe, my church, it is not going to be being that way with you. You got two options. You can keep on chasing significance through the ways of the world. You can keep on looking inward and trying to leverage everyone around you for yourself, or you can reject that. You can put death behind you and live fearlessly by giving yourself to the needy and to the broken and leveraging what you have for the sake of other people. Those are the only two ways it's going to happen. And he continued teaching. He said, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you. And I bet he had them raise their hands. They're sitting there on the side of the road. Raise your hands. Who wants to be great? And nobody wanted to raise their hand, but they were just fighting about who was the specialist. So they're like, they've been around him long enough. They know you can't fool Jesus. And he's sitting there. Who wants to be great? And 12 hands go like this. It's like, all right, cool. Well, whoever wants that must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. That's how it's going to work. And Peter's like, well, no, that's not actually how it works, Jesus, because you see, stop. Not so with you. It's not how we're going to do it in my kingdom. And I think if Peter were here this morning, he would beg us to see from the pages of his story that if the one who spoke the world into motion, the guy who had all the power and all the rights came to lay them down, then we got to do the same thing. Jesus said, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And at this moment, like, the disciples knew. They knew there was only one path forward for the church, for this mission, for his people, for his tribe. To live that and live it intentionally. Jesus did this with extreme intentionality. Not so with you can't just be a cute little phrase that we like or that we get inspired by and walk out of here feeling pumped up by. It has to be the lens through which we see everybody around us. We have to let those words, not so with you, lead us toward the needy and toward the broken so that we can give of ourselves for the sake of the people who need us, for the sake of the next generation, for the sake of the people that we're surrounded by who are desperate for the good news we have, who are yearning to breathe the oxygen of God's love that lives inside of us. That's what Jesus called us to. That's what he said his kingdom is all about. And if we truly believe that he is who he says he is and he did what he did, then there's only one way to respond. We all know the golden rule. Do unto others as you have them do to you. But I believe in this moment, Jesus raised the bar for everyone who would follow him. He said, yeah, do unto others as you'd have them do to you. That's great. Here's what I want. I want you to do unto others as I did for you. There's no wiggle room on that one. Treat the people around you the way I treated you, even when you didn't deserve it. And that's a game changer. It takes the entire value system our world has been living by, the entire value system we've all been enculturated into, and it flips it completely upside down and forces us to start asking the question, how can I leverage myself for the sake of the people around me? It forces us to look out at the people who are below us in the org chart, the people who have less power than us, and decide no longer are they for us, but we are for them, and start asking how we can get ourselves up under their burdens, how we can take our time and our resources and our abilities and spend them for the sake of the people around us, how we can connect our possessions and their problems. And I wonder this morning, what if we decided that we were going to have a different picture and live toward a different vision of what greatness really looks like? What if we decided to be different types of heroes and stop clamoring to get up on the pedestal and start making heroes and creating space for other people to thrive? What if we started asking, how can I leverage myself to help other people chase the vision of the future God's placed on their heart? How can I live my life in such a way that the fruit of my life grows on other people's trees? Those are the questions that connect you to the radical kingdom of Jesus. And those are the questions our world desperately needs you to be asking. 2020 has been an unbelievably, unspeakably difficult year that none of us could have even come close to imagining 9 months ago. And I want you to know this, wherever you go this week, every life that you crash into, digitally or physically, is experiencing some pain and some suffering and some frustration in 2020. You are surrounded by people who are scared and frustrated, and the hope inside of them is drying up. And so many of them have spent their lives chasing an identity that's defined by the things of this world, believing that success or money or things or people could give them value, and they're frightened that they're unloved, and they're frightened that they're not valuable, and they're terrified to die. And trust me on this, if you will aim your life in the direction of not so with you and say, God, use me in their lives, then God will work in and through you to create a better future for those people and set them free. And he will set you free in the process. C.S. Lewis, at the end of his book, Mere Christianity, tells us that the only thing left for us outside of this radical kingdom system of self-giving is hell. Because self-absorption is hell. Lewis says, living self-absorbed is a very literal and experiential hell because it cuts us off from God and it makes him feel impossibly far. And I want you to know this morning, Jesus is shouting to you from the pages of Peter's story, you are not far. No matter where you've been or what you've done or what's been done to you, all you got to do is turn around right now and stop following the empty path this world is leading you down and start following Jesus down his and say, hey, not so with you. Lord, I believe that you are who you said you are. You did what you did. And I want you to leverage me for the sake of the people around me. And if you do that, Jesus will write a better story in your life and the life of every single person you crash into. You're not far. Will you pray with me? Lord, thank you. Thank you for inviting us into something that's so much bigger than us. Thank you for asking us to leverage ourselves for something greater than ourselves. Lord, I'll confess, like from a stage in front of a whole bunch of people, I've spent so much of my life focused on me. So much of my life trying to be the hero, to be number two in the kingdom. And so much of my life believing that my value was caught up in things that are temporal and fading away. God, would you forgive me for that? Would you forgive all of us for the times where we've wasted our lives away trying to leverage other people for ourselves? And would you lead us forward? Would you just stamp "not so with you" on every single one of our hearts today, so that as Revision Church, as this tribe, we might walk back out into our city in this time, our time, and leverage ourselves for the sake of the people around us the same way that you leveraged yourself for us. We just thank you for that love that changes everything. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.